This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Roshan Kadison and Noel Lim.
Hello.
Good morning, everyone. Right, let's take a look at over the U.S., how they closed a few hours ago. A little bit of a mixed day as well. The Dow was up 0.6%. The S&P was up 0.3%. But the Nasdaq bucked the trend there, was down 0.2%.
Yeah, so Asian markets are a bit mixed here. Nikkei was up 0.7%, Shanghai Composite up 0.1% marginally, Hang Seng was up 0.2%, Kospi was down 0.7%, Singapore's STI down 0.8%, FBM KLCI bucking the trend, I guess, up 0.5%.
So the word of the day is mixed day. That's the word of the day today.
All right, and to help us make sense of these mixed signals and for some insights into what's moving markets, we have on the line Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Good morning, Vishnu. Always great to have you on the line. Let's start with overnight news, and that is the U.S. Consumer Price Index. It rose 5.4% in July from a year earlier and 0.5% from June. What do you think? How does this confirm the Fed's narrative that inflation is transitory?
I will just venture this much, which is to say, at least it doesn't fly in the face of the Fed's narrative that it is transitory, because these are initial signs that inflation is starting to peak. Particularly if you saw core inflation, that has cooled, as well, and so it's quite comforting that inflation may be peaking. But the trouble for the Fed is they also cannot be entirely sure for how long this will be elevated. And so the transitory window is the one that's the fluffy part of the equation that could still be a cause enough for debate. So we're not out of the woods yet, but it certainly is encouraging and comforting.
So on this note, the US dollar has been strengthening against the majors of late. Do you expect this momentum to sustain?
It is going to go back and forth somewhat, but we have been taking the stand that this year is probably going to be a year with a lot more dollar strength in sharp contrast to last year, and that's going to be for two reasons. The first reason is going to be that the data coming out of the US on balance, and this is where some of the back and forth will be between headlines, on balance should confirm that U.S. recovery remains on track, which means taper comes into the mix sooner rather than later. And that also means that typically that's associated with a stronger dollar as long-end yields also tend to rise. The other reason why the dollar could also be strong is we think that further recovery will see the U.S. ahead of the rest. So on a differential, even as global recovery remains the story, the initial phase of that global recovery is going to favor the dollar, given the Fed's lead over, whether we think of it in monetary policy terms, over the ECB, or whether it's the Fed's growth boost over the rest of the world.
Over on this side of the world, Vishnu, dollar strengthening, probably not the best thing for imports, but probably one of those positives for exports. But that said, when we take a look at emerging markets, what will be the key headwinds facing these markets in Asia as it tries to navigate itself back into some kind of recovery this year?
I think the single biggest recovery hurdle in the very near term, and the one that's also necessarily the most urgent one, is for this part of the world to get vaccinations up so that economies can open somewhat more unencumbered by back and forth on lockdown, so on and so forth. At least to get the domestic economy all running up and running and connected, because having parts of the economy closed is also going to be against the multiplier effect of growth. So that's the very first challenge. Following which, I think the next challenge will be how growth can continue to and the recovery continue next year in the midst of potential taper headwinds. And beyond that, I think U.S.-China risks then become the next challenge as markets look at opening up supply chains boosting exports further. In the very near term, amongst all of this, one other factor that could increasingly become a little bit of a differentiator is higher debt levels that have been built up going, needing to come out of the pandemic. That was a necessity. But how investors and rating agencies react to that, especially in 2022, 2023, those could be certain risks that we watch from the corner of our eyes.
Can we then zoom into one of these emerging markets in the region, Vishnu, which is Indonesia? Talking about some of the factors that you mentioned, only 8% of Indonesians are fully vaccinated, and the Delta variant is tearing across the archipelago. What does your economic outlook for Indonesia look like now?
We recently did some revisions to growth. Oddly enough, we didn't really revise down in Indonesia's growth very much for two reasons. One, we were pessimistic to start with because we were bracing ourselves, hoping against it, but bracing ourselves for the variant risk to play out all over the place. And of course, as you rightly pointed out, low vaccination rates do not augur well for this backdrop. But also because I think the first half growth metrics for Indonesia has been not too bad, which means that for the whole year, growth is going to be just slightly under 4%. That is not its biggest challenge. The biggest challenge is how Indonesia can continue to make sure that there's enough fiscal policy in place to make sure the private sector doesn't crumble during the meantime. And I think the single biggest policy risk is reopening the country too soon and letting go of the ball just before the final mile. So that's I think going to be the most challenging part. And part of that risk analysis came from you. The archipelago means that the nature of the country, spread across such a dispersed area, it makes it also more challenging to get through this pandemic.
Well, Singapore has been a bright spot. It has revised its annual GDP growth forecast upwards to between 6 and 7%. What are the catalysts driving this bullishness?
Well, part of it is in the rearview mirror. First half growth numbers came out better than expected. The upward revision was more a validation of what was already widely expected. So it's playing a little coy and then admitting that, yeah, you know what, the math is adding up that way. But I think the more important point around it, and to stay on topic, things like the very hot and partly worrying property market also have contributed to the type of growth numbers without necessarily meaning that underlying broad-based growth recovery is as good. At the end of the day, Singapore is a small open economy, which necessarily means that it's with the global demand rising, particularly the regional type rising, that you get durable and the good quality growth. And that's something I think Singapore continues to watch for while it's keeping some of the fiscal buffers in place, full well knowing that we're not quite out of the woods yet, regardless of what headline numbers say.
Vishnu, pardon me as I backtrack a little bit here, because earlier you mentioned, I think when we were talking about Indonesia and EMs, the concerns around debt levels and ratings, right? When we take a look back closer to, look at Malaysia, how would you rate, Malaysia's likelihood that we'll be able to maintain our ratings or even the risk of being re-rated? Yes, a lot of the ratings agencies are being a lot more, understanding this year, considering the macro environment and all of that. But how long can that patience last if there's no real progress on the debt deficit and things like that?
That's a real good question, Roshan. And I think the bigger point is backtracking is the story of my life, so no need to apologize for that. But here's the thing. I like that you said that they're understanding it. I kind of concur, but my problem is I don't think they're understanding enough. And I think we'll begin to see this divergence in 2022, 2023, particularly as advanced economies come out of this sooner, and then I think the slippage in terms of credit metrics will look somewhat more stark in the region. In Malaysia's case, actually, I am not as worried about the credit metrics, because if you see the recovery in oil prices means that at least one part of the revenue sustainability issue is less of an immediate concern. The bigger issue may be to do with more sensitive things such as political stability and the kind of policies that are going to come out of it, because that will then determine the eventual path in terms of whether the ability to grow out of debt, revenue sustainability, so on and so forth. So those would be the bigger issues for me, not so much the rise in the debt right now. In fact, I think it is necessary, and it is the lesser of the two evils rather than not providing enough support. So we should track back a bit from the credit metrics in the very near term, because I'm quite confident Malaysia has the ability to grow out of the debt. So that's not the issue. The issue really is, and the more imminent one is around political clarity and policy stability.
All right, Vishnu, thanks as always for your insights. That was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, giving us a snapshot of what's moving markets, from CPI to emerging market trends, and also looking at political instability in Malaysia and how that's going to affect our economic outlook.
And debt. Of course, we talked about debt. And actually, on that note, I do want to remind you guys of a grill that we did earlier this year in January with James McCormack, Global Head of Sovereign Ratings for Fitch Ratings, because the global sum of government debt issued in 2020, at the end of 2020, was $78 trillion, expected to reach $84 trillion by the end of 2021. James did a great job of explaining the ramifications, the risks, and the kind of tolerances that the rating agencies might be paying attention to this year. But also remember that this was in January. It was still a very enlightening conversation.
Very much worth a listen. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.